Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name's Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is the owner of the South Point Casino here in Las Vegas, Michael Gaughan. Although we're going to be speaking to Mr. Gaughan about a number of subjects, the primary reason for his visit is to discuss the legacy of his father, Jackie Gaughan, who passed away almost a year ago. Jackie was a mover and shaker in Las Vegas casinos for many decades. On this show, we've had Jeffrey Compton of CDC Gaming Reports a few times. The report summarized gaming news for casino management, and relatively few players subscribed to it. A new feature, however, might interest some of you. There is now a searchable casino news database in which every article published by CDC Gaming Reports and most of the other English language gaming news is referenced. At this time, the database goes back to January 2014, about 10,000 articles, and within a few weeks, 8,500 more articles going back to the first of 2013. For example, in preparing for this interview, I entered Gaughan, G-A-U-G-H-A-N, into the search engine. There were several articles about the services for Jackie, and there were also articles about Michael Gaughan, such as the opening of the online poker site and the hearings about possibly betting on the Olympics. And there were also articles about the next generation of Gaughans, because his son, Michael Jr., is general manager at the Rampart Casino here in Las Vegas, and son John Gaughan now is a partial owner of the Hotel Nevada in downtown Ely, Nevada. In addition, all four of Michael Gaughan's children together own a piece of two casinos in Mesquite, Nevada, which is 90 miles up the road from Las Vegas. Just for fun, I searched for Ivy, I-V-E-Y, and all the articles about Phil Ivy are archived. Certainly the ones about the Baccarat lawsuits and scandal, but also any of the other times he made the news as a poker player, all that's in there. So as a writer, I can see plenty of uses for this database. Perhaps players will too some of the time. For those who do, go to cdcgamingreports.com and click on the Casino Industry News Database button at the top. Any thoughts on this, Richard?
No, I read the CDC Gaming Reports every day. Yeah, I think it's a really valuable resource. So,
all right. The Riviera Hotel. Riviera Hotel is, actually, before I do that, let me introduce our guest, and then we'll mention the Riviera Hotel. Okay, Michael Gaughan was born in Omaha, Nebraska, raised in Las Vegas. The first casino he built was the Barbary Coast, which became the foundation of his Coast casinos, which he later sold to Boyd. He bought back the South Coast Casino from Boyd, renamed it South Point. Michael Gaughan, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob.
Good to have you here again. Now, the Riviera Hotel has been a landmark in Las Vegas since the mid-50s. It's going to be imploded. It seems to be bought by the convention bureau here for 180-some million. So they can, it's big land, and they're going to explode it and build some more convention center. Do you have any thoughts about this, Mr. Gaughan?
Well, it gives them some visibility on the Strip. They own the old landmark piece, and this time they'll have everything except the southeast corner on Conventions Center, and they'll own all the way over to the Strip. It's about three quarters of a block they pick up.
So those. That'll like double their space almost from the space, the current from south of the Hilton.
It'll total. It's about.
It's a big increase.
It's probably about what they already own. It's probably about a 30% increase in landmass.
So, and do you think that's a good thing for Vegas?
Rossi Rodenkotter is the head of the LVCVA, and he believes that this will give him a whole new dimension.
All right. Now, last weekend, Academy Awards. Someday they may allow betting on that as to who's going to win Best Picture and something like that. Would you think that would be a good thing for sportsbooks to do, or too many problems?
Anything that a sportsbook can do to give Las Vegas more publicity is worth it. The problems with the Academy Awards is that people know in advance who the winners are, but you can still put it up, take small bets, and get the publicity. Nobody's going to take a $10,000 bet on what movies.
Especially since the voters could come and make that bet.
Yes.
All right. You own the Barbary Coast.
I did it one time, yes.
And now it's part of the Caesars family, and they renamed it Cromwell, which as a proud Irish American, that must bug the hell out of you.
Well, it's not a... It is not a great name for in Irish history. It's a he devastated Ireland. The only good news about him was that Henry VIII in the end executed him too.
I would have thought that. I mean, there's a significant Irish population, and so a lot of people would be offended. And when you rename something, you ought to have some respect for the heritage of the property, and it was owned by the Gaughans for decades, and they should have figured that one out, but somehow they didn't.
Well, I think they ran into a problem with the first name, Gandersnoot, and which turned out to be was a small boutique hotel chain where that had some Russian mob influence in it that they found out at the last minute, and this was a quick change. I don't think they considered it, and it's there, and it's built and done.
So be it.
So be it is right.
All right. Now, betting on the Olympics. Now, we're taping this show a few days early. The vote on whether or not to allow sports books to take bets on the Olympics will be February 26th, the day this show will originally air. Now, your name has been linked to leading the charge in lobbying for this change. Why is betting on the Olympics a good idea, and why now?
First of all, it has passed the gaming board, and the vote on the 26th will be with the gaming commission. It's just another venue. Probably the two biggest areas is the basketball in the summer and the hockey in the winter. Some of the reasons that they didn't want to do it is because they said a lot of the events are judged, but boxing events are judged. And once again, you protect yourself by the size of bet you take. And it gives you more publicity. Jackie Gaughan came with when they came with the rules was because my dad put the put where the space lab was going to crash, and that was about what was that 20 some years ago, and he put that on the board and put the odds of the different countries and the different oceans up, and Las Vegas was 10,000 to 1. And
good thing that didn't come in.
But it got national publicity, and it was and that was the last time gaming ever allowed that. They had no sense of humor.
Would they think they're going to allow presidential voting on presidential elections in the future?
I wish they would. That's that's a big, that that is big in Europe on betting on our presidential elections. I don't. I can see them not doing local elections and senatorial and congressional elections, but the presidential election is something that is a bet on.
Yes. You can go to England and bet on who's going to win the presidency of the United States.
Over the last 60 years.
All right. Now, Richard's actually not in the studio today. He's at home waiting for a bed to be delivered. And so we don't have eye contact as to when he's going to ask the next question or I am. So jump in here, Richard, if you want to.
Oh, yeah. No, I will. Don't worry. I'm not shy.
All right. So now let's talk about your father, Jackie. I'm going to be listing a few things about what I think are facts about him. If anything I misstated, speak right up. Now, your father, Jackie, was an illegal bookmaker back in Omaha, Nebraska, as was his father. And he moved to Vegas in 1950 after a 10% tax rate on bookies was imposed by the federal government.
The my grandfather was a roadhouse operator.
A roadhouse operator.
A roadhouse
is like a pub or
no,
a
roadhouse is like a
hotel.
Like it's like a gambling. It's like an illegal type of gambling establishment, usually on the edge of town.
They have a whorehouse associated with it?
No, we didn't.
Not in Omaha. Okay,
not in Omaha.
I apologize for asking. All right, now.
Troublemaker.
All right, Jackie Gahn invested.
But happened to him, he came back from the war. He was stationed in Tonopah in 44. He spent about almost 2.5 years. I went back to Omaha. My grandfather was killed about 46. And I went back to college and made his living as a bookmaker. In 1950, they passed that federal tax law. Before that, gaming or bookmaking was not federally illegal, but the government passed a bill that you had to pay a tax on every bet, and everybody who got a tax stamp, they gave the names to the states and the cities. It was kind of a catch 22. My grandmother was a very smart lady. She thought that bookmaking was not the place to be in Nebraska, and she went out and bought him 2-3% of the Flamingo Hotel in 1951. And in October of 51, my dad came out as a part owner of the Flamingo Hotel.
Uh-huh. Was that something that, I mean, did you need a connection to be able to buy a piece of that? Or
A couple of my grandfather's partners were a fellow named Ed Barrick and Sam Zygmunt. Ed Barrick is part of the Barrick Lecture Series at UNLV.
Well, okay, so she had a connection then to be able to buy him.
Yes.
Well, after your dad sold the Union Plaza, the Barrick Company bought it. Is that the same family?
No.
It's a different family.
No, a whole different family. There are three Barricks. There's Ed Barrick. There's Barrick Mining, and the Barrick people that bought the Union Plaza.
Okay. Now,
As a side note.
Oh yeah.
They came out in October of 51. Them and my brother. I could not get into the parochial school here, the old St. Joseph's.
So you would have been about 7 or 8 years old.
I was about 7 years old, and my Irish Catholic grandmother would not let me come to Las Vegas until I could get into the Catholic school.
Uh huh.
There was no pagan Protestant schools for me.
Uh huh. Good.
So I got here in June of 52.
That's when you were allowed to go to Catholic school.
Right. I could get in the following year. I could not get in a midterm. I got here when I was 8.
Very good. Now, your father invested in a number of casinos, mostly downtown, but including the Flamingo. Now, at one time it was... At one time, it was said that he owned 25% of downtown Las Vegas land or casinos.
The first place he bought into in 49, he bought into the old Boulder Club. So the first hotel or the first casino he had here was the Boulder Club. Then in 51 he went into the Flamingo, and then he started buying casinos downtown. He owned the Pioneer Club, Club Bingo, Las Vegas Club, Union Plaza, Gold Spike, El Cortez, and the Western Bingo one time,
and at least part of the Golden Nugget.
And we were both on the board of Golden Nugget with Steve.
All right, now he's best known for the El Cortez, which he bought in 1963. The El Cortez was 22 years old at that point, and you yourself would have been about 20. And apparently there was this old mobster named Irish Green who came with a property. Irish Green, great name, did something good for Bugsy Siegel several years earlier, and so he got to stay at the El Cortez for life, even though the El Cortez changed hands twice, and Bugsy himself was long gone, having been murdered in 1947. So do you have any memories of Irish Green?
Irish? No, I would have an Irish. Irish used to run money for the different factions of town, and had a gambling habit. And the second time he lost the money, they took him out to the desert and half beat him to death.
Uh-huh.
And he came back almost senile, and for some reason he wound up staying in the El Cortez the rest of his life. I knew him. He was just an old guy that my dad tried to move him out one time when the world came down on him, and so I remember him always being at the El Cortez. He caused no problems.
All right.
He lived and got three meals a day. Benny Binion used to give him some money. Chester Sims used to give him some money. But he was just a harmless old guy.
Now, your father had a propensity of walking the floor of the hotel and getting to know the patrons. It said he fixed flat tires and did a lot of those kind of things for his guests.
He walked walked all of his properties at least 3-4 times a week. And when he walked, he was on the floor of all his property. He probably knew all his employees. He had a great memory,
and
knew all of his customers.
And the El Cortez and the Plaza aren't next door to each other. That was that's quite a little walk. And Vegas gets warm in the summer. He must have moved.
Yeah, he walked. They put a. In the late 60s, they put one of those leg mileage meters,
pedometers, yeah.
And he walked between 4 to 6 miles a day.
Wow. And do you follow that? I mean, do you walk the South Point frequently? And
not the way he does, or he did. No, It took me 40 years, and I finally got a parking place in the back by my office, and I probably don't walk it. I walk it as much, but I walk through it maybe 2 out of 3 times a week. But my dad used to walk his entire places. The South Point today is a very big place to walk.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's true. That's a lot bigger square footage than.
At that point, it might be bigger than all my dad's casinos combined downtown.
Yeah,
is that right?
If you take out the Golden Nugget, the places that he himself owned.
Well, I mean the Vegas Club isn't small, and the Plaza isn't small, but so Pioneer is not pretty small. Okay, now your father was also a mentor to Steve Wynn. When Steve was just starting out at the Golden Nugget, your father owned a piece of the business and would drop by every day. during Jackie's funeral mass on St. Patrick's Day last year, Steve Wynn was one of the primary speakers and told us some of the things that Jackie did. One day, according to Wynn, Jackie came into Steve Wynn's office and told him a certain slot machines that were currently quarters should be dollars, and the ones that were currently for dollars should be for quarters. Wynn said he thought about it for a little bit, decided Jackie was right, and announced he'd get it changed right away. Jackie told him not to bother. He'd already spoken to the slot director, and the slot machines were going to be changed the next day. Now, I found this story amazing. Now, it was no surprise that Jackie ordered employees around at the El Cortez, but to do so successfully at several other casinos as well, especially when he was only a minority owner, that surprised me. Now, did this kind of thing happen at all the properties he had pieces of? Or?
Well, I remember when the Flamingo Hotel had 90 slot machines. And he finally talked to Chester Sims in adding 200. So they had 290.
Still seemed like a small number.
These are
to keep the women folks
busy.
Happy while the real men gamble the table games.
The machines held about from 50 to 60%.
All
right,
But you're going back to the 50s. That's with the slot machines in the casinos. Well, I were for the wives and girlfriends.
All right, now your dad owned piece of lots of his competitors. Now, why did he do this, and is this kind of thing done much today?
Well, he was my dad, Steve, myself, the Domainis, Walzinger, two other people. I remember when we took the Nugget over. The board of the Nugget at that time owned less than 5% of the hotel, and that was an easy takeover. My dad had bought the Vegas Club and the El Cortez from the Housels family, and he wound up being a major investor in the Showboat with them.
Uh-huh.
And that was just a lot of people liked having my dad around.
Very good.
I think one of the complaints, that people complain about the way casinos are today compared to the old days, and I think so much of it has to do with the fact that when somebody actually owns the place, they tend to think about the decisions they make differently than if it's just owned by a corporation.
Well, I've always said that that short term to a corporation is 3 months, and long term is one day past 3 months. The corporations are completely different today. They don't have people that really care. They got the accountants and the college graduates their philosophy is just different. Now, I don't want to knock college graduates. I do have a master's from Southern California. But back in the 60s, I was one of the few guys, other than my father, who also had a college degree from Creighton.
Yeah.
Undergraduate.
That's back in Omaha.
Back in Omaha. But I was, it's a whole different thing today. When I had the Barbary Coast, Gold Coast, Orleans, and Sun Coast, and I was building the South Coast, I was getting where I was getting too big. The bigger you get, the personalized service becomes less and less too.
You have to delegate.
I've always delegated, but I'm saying being back with the South Point today and just having one place, and I have many of my long time employees with me now, it's much easier to run one place walk the floor. I know my customers. Bob's a customer. And
sometimes he refers to me as his enemy.
Better watch Bob. But it's a, I think one of the problems you have today, you know, that Caesars Entertainment is having is that they're just very, very big.
Well, I think you also were right when you said that they just don't care. So, you know, if somebody gets really horrible service and leaves and they lose that person as a customer, you know, the people working there don't care because it's not their money. You know what I mean? There's no – whereas if there was an owner there where it was his money, you know, when every time a customer walked out the door and wasn't coming back, you know, I think things would be different.
Well, the one thing you have is that, you know, I get the complaints. In the big hotels, you don't know who to complain to. Unfortunately, they can find me or my partner Frank Tony all the time, and they tell us. So, but I think with the big hotels, they care when they're not making money.
Yeah.
If they're making money, I don't think they care about anything.
Well, that's not a whole lot different than players feel. When we're making money, we don't care either. So, your father must have known several mobsters. Las Vegas was a mob town back in the 50s and 60s and wasn't really clear of them until into the 80s. Now, your father was somehow able to survive in this environment and yet maintain the reputation of being a straight shooter. How did he accomplish this?
Well, it was a much different town. I mean, it was I think that the different cities had the different hotels. When my dad was in the Flamingo, he had Greenbaum and Dave Berman were there, and Chester Sims was there, and they split up, and half those people went and built the Riviera.
Uh-huh.
And the Flamingo got bought into by Parvin, and Parvin got bought out by Landsberg and Cohen out of Miami, and then Corian came along and bought them out. But I think it wasn't, you know, until the days of Splatro and Rosenthal, the mob was very low key. And the town had very, very few problems. I mean, it wasn't. It was kind of like everybody knew, but the publicity was nothing like it got to in that one era.
Yeah, but Tony Spilotro didn't die until 86, so he.
That's right. Well, but it was. You had the independent operators. And you had people that represented certain other factions.
All right,
how's that, Bob?
That's good. Now,
you know, I just want to say, Bob, I remember when you know, when I was working, I worked with a boss who told me that when he broke in as a dealer, you know, he worked with this guy named Willie who was a boss. And somewhere around the time the Greenfelt Jungle came out, and he went and read the book and realized that this boss that he worked with, who he said was the nicest guy, was this guy in the Greenfelt Jungle called Ice Pick Willie, who had
Ice
this
Pick
name
Willie.
Because he used to kill people with an ice pick.
In the ear.
Yeah, in the ear, exactly. So I'm wondering, did you, when you were young, coming up in the business, did you meet any of these sort of notorious characters?
Yeah, I remember them from when I was a kid. There was a very, probably the toughest guy in town was a fellow named Dave Berman. And Dave Berman went to the Riviera. And when I was getting licensed back in Illinois, I had a boat back there for about 25 years. One of the questions they asked me, what my relationship was with Davey Berman, and I said, "Well, He's one of the first casino people I met because my cousin Alan told me to go up and shake his hand. I was about 7 years old at the time. And he gave me a silver dollar and told me every time I walked into the Flamingo to shake his hand. So for about 2-3 years of my life, every time I walked into the Flamingo to shake his hand, I got a silver dollar. I thought Mr. Berman was one of the nicest men in town.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the toughest guys in town.
So,
but I'm saying all these people I knew, but I'm saying I had no relationship with them. I was a little kid.
Sure, yeah. I think didn't his daughter write a book, Dave Berman's daughter? I think she did.
I don't know. Mr. Gahn's earphone went bad for a second.
What was the question? I'm sorry.
He asked you if Dave Berman's daughter might have written a book.
Susie Berman. I think Susie was 1 year older than me. When all the kids at the Flamingo all kind of hung out with each other. But you're talking about little kids.
Yeah.
Now, you yourself have been a very successful casino owner by any standard. What were the most important lessons in operating a casino that you learned from your father?
Primarily, hard work. I mean, my dad was a worker, and I don't think until he was in his 60s that my mother finally got him to take some vacations. My dad never took a vacation. My dad worked 6 or 7 days a week because he liked it.
Now, your father sold the El Cortez in 2009. To a longtime friend and business associate, Kenny Epstein, and two other longtime employees. Hmm. The story goes that you told your father you'd build him a luxurious penthouse suite atop the South Point to live out his days, but Jackie instead wanted to live at the El Cortez.
Well, what happened, my father started to come down with dementia. And about 6 years before he died, I got his power of attorney, and I went out and I sold all of his places one day.
In one day?
In one day. And not the first day, but I'm saying I found a buyer. In fact, it was Barry talked about. He was still somewhat lucid at the time, and he said. He said, go ahead and sell them, but don't sell the El Cortez. And so I took the El Cortez out of the deal. We sold the Union Plaza, the Las Vegas Club, Club Bingo, Western Bingo, and the Gold Spike at one time, plus an immense amount of downtown land. My dad had a lot of land downtown. We kept the El Cortez and the immediate land around the El Cortez. When I built the Suncoast, not the South Point, not the South Coast, I wanted to build him a suite there. He had built, when he built that tower at the El Cortez about 18 years before, he built an apartment for he and my mother up there on the top floor, which was a very, very a nice apartment. And he told me at that time that he didn't want me to sell the El Cortez. And he wanted to stay at the El Cortez the rest of his life. About 2 years after I sold the other hotels, he was getting worse, and I talked to him, and we sold the El Cortez primarily to Kenny Epstein as a major partner with Mike Nolan and Joe Woody.
All three of them are still there.
Also, yeah, Kenny was a major owner. Mike Nolan's is a general manager, and Joe Woody was a chief financial officer. On the condition that my father would stay there as long as he wanted to. In fact, Kenny Epstein kept my dad's secretary, and had two full time people assigned to him. And I took my dad out for dinner twice a week. I either had lunch with my dad either lunch or dinner once a week. Kenny did a great job with my dad. When my dad finally got sick, I went down to see him. He wasn't doing well. I decided to move him into my house, and I spent about a week getting an area ready in my house. I went to pick him up on a Monday. He wasn't doing very well. I talked to the doctor. The doctor came over and looked at him. He said, "Put him in the hospice." My wife said, "No, I could not put him in the hospice." I called his doctor, his longtime doctor in Santa Barbara, who said, "Put him in the hospice." My dad entered hospice at about 6 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday. Saw his entire family on Tuesday and passed on about 2 a.m. in the morning on Wednesday. He was in the hospice about a day and a half. For all practical purposes, he never left the Ocotes.
Now, you earlier mentioned your grandmother wouldn't let you come to Vegas until you could go to Catholic school.
There was only one Catholic school at the time.
And
30,000 people.
So there's a Catholic high school now called Bishop Gorman that used to be near downtown. Now it's out in Summerlin, which is a suburb northwest of town. Now, your father was the first recipient of the Knight of the Gale honor at that school. And you and your wife were honored with the same award 18 years later. What was that all about?
Well, that's their one big fundraiser every year. It's a man of the year type of dinner. They call it the Night of the Gale, and I think I'm the only father son team that they have, and it was just an honor. I went to Gorman, and my brother went to Gorman, all my kids went to Gorman, all my brother's kids went to Gorman. I currently have three grandchildren. I will have, or next year I'll have three grandchildren in Gorman. A senior, a sophomore, and a freshman.
Is it still male only?
Oh, no, it's never been male.
It's never been male only.
No, it's always been co-ed. Las Vegas only has one Catholic high school.
That's kind of amazing now, but, I mean, how many people in Las Vegas? 1.5 million or something?
I think in the Valley it's over 2 million.
And wow. A considerable number of them are, you know, Hispanic, and so they would all be Catholic, and so there's only one in the Valley. There's only one Catholic high school.
Only one Catholic high school, and I this year they enroll about 1,450 students.
Yeah, they always seem to win the sporting titles. So,
Bob, I played varsity football for 4 years.
Uh huh.
I didn't win four games in four years, and they kicked the you know what out of us, and nobody complained about us.
And they still gave you the Knight of the Gale honor after that poor performance?
Yes. Huh. We did a little better in basketball, but what I'm saying, I remember the football days. However, when I went to Gorman, you only had Vegas, Rancho, and Gorman in the city, Basic and Henderson, and Boulder City High School in Boulder City.
City's a little bit bigger now, and
yes.
For those of you who don't live here, Las Vegas City is actually pretty small, and the population isn't that big. But when we say Vegas, we talk about Greater Vegas, which is quite extended. And I guess it doesn't quite go down to Laughlin or Mesquite, but almost everywhere in between.
Were you talking about North Las Vegas, Henderson, and the incorporated areas of Clark County?
All right, now. During the commercial section, we're going to talk about the a promotion in March that you call the $600,000 March Money Madness promotion. So one time in your office, you told me you had three rules for running a promotion. Or maybe I've forgotten one. I assume you know what they are. Would you like to tell us, or would you like me to say it?
No, I'll tell you. Rule number one is to give away what you say you're going to give away.
So that means if you advertise 600,000,
you got to give away 600,000. Number two, you want to have as many winners as possible, and there's always that balance between the big prizes and the small prizes. But you want to, in some contests, I vary, but you want to have as many winners as possible, and they have, three is the best. Kiss. Keep it simple, stupid.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably the most important.
And now, did you inherit those three rules from your father?
Well, I kind of learned them. I don't think he ever had the three rules, but I would always contest were based on that. He had the he was really the first one. When we stopped having when downtown used to have the one grand prize winner a month, he was the first one. I think he came with a social security contest downtown, which was it was simple. He gave away what he said he would give away, and he had a lot of big and small winners.
That's so different from like the. Station Casinos has big billboards in town that if you sign up, it says you win you get $500 for signing up, but then in teensy letters it says up to, which is, I suppose technically they're giving away what they say they're giving away, but they're not. If you have to have teensy letters of gold paint on a yellow background, there's something wrong with that system. All right. Let's go do...
No comment about that.
No comment. Well, who would fire you? No, you have to live with these guys.
Yeah.
So they've already kicked me out, so I don't have to live with them. So that's okay. I can say it. Okay. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. The main promotion in February is on penny slots called Penny Perks. I've been talking about this all month, so let's talk about what's going to happen next month, which is going to happen this coming Sunday. Beginning March 1st at 3 a.m., there will be two separate casino-wide progressives running 24/7 in the $600,000 March Money Madness. The bigger of the two progressives starts at 10,000 and must be hit before it reaches 25,000. One winner will get the big prize every time, and everybody actively playing with a player's card earns $25 in free play when the jackpot goes off. Immediately thereafter, it starts again in at 10,000 and starts to climb again, and it will continue to climb and it hits after the start of April 1st. Simultaneously with this is another progressive beginning at 1,000, which must be hit by 2,500. So this too will start again immediately after it hits and is predicted to be hit three times a day all month long. If you wear green on St. Patrick's Day, Tuesday, March 17th, midnight to midnight, or even if you don't wear green, you're going to get 2x points on all video poker machines, 5x points on slots and video reels. All machines, no limit. Next week's class at noon, Wednesday, in the Grandview Lounge, will be 9-6 Jacks or Better Multi-Strike. This is a 99.79% game. It is slightly positive 24/7, given the 0.30% cash slot club. But including mailers and occasional double points, it's a good deal. The way multi-strike works is you pay for four lines at a time. You play the bottom line. If you do not at least get your money back, you forfeit your entire bet. But if you get a score on the bottom line, then you get to play the second line, and all wins there are multiplied by two. This kind of compensates because you only get up there half the time. If you win on both of the bottom lines, you get to play the third lineup. Everything's multiplied by four. You win on all three of those.
you get to play the top line where it's multiplied by 8. This requires 4 different strategies for the game because on each line, you're both playing to score points on the current line and for some number of additional lines above, which if you get there, you get to play them for double the stakes at no extra pay. So it is not a simple game, but it is high-paying, and it's worth it to learn it. At the Palms, on the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Friday night, winners share $10,000. You do not need to be there to win. You need to claim the prize by midnight or it evaporates. 5 times entries Friday, 7:45 to midnight. They're also offered 2 times entries between 4 and 6:30 Friday afternoon. The last drawing for Friday night will be tomorrow, February 27th. And then immediately you can start earning tickets for a drawing system with the same limits and restrictions for the first 4 weeks in March. PFP, Play for Prizes, ending tomorrow, February 27th. You can earn up to $190 a day in gift cards, and the gift cards are whatever they have in supply. So it includes Lowe's, it includes CVS, it includes Albertsons, it includes Chevron Gas. The selection can vary daily. Beginning Monday, March 2nd, for 2 weeks, the Play for Prizes will be real cash money. Up to $190 a day, Monday through Friday, for 2 weeks. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed at a rate of 0.02% for video poker. You get to keep your points. At videopoker.com, the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, which is $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, it allows you to get correction on most of the game. It's a good place to play quick quads, for example. You get this. You can get the strategy from me or the Wizard of Odds site, but if you really want correction, you go to videopoker.com. For most players, you have no idea of how badly you play until you have a computer programming correcting your mistakes. The game of the week at videopoker.com is 100 Play Draw Poker. Mr. Gon is giving me signs. He's making fun of me. I'm not exactly sure what he's saying. Maybe he'll tell us later. The game of the week is 100 Play Quick Quads. So as I mentioned periodically on this show, Quick Quads is my favorite game. And 100 Play is great. So at the South Point, I play $10 Play Quick Quads. I would rather play 10-cent 100 Play Quick Quads if it was the same pay schedule. It's the same size bet, the same expected value. But 100 Play greatly reduces the variance for both the house and the player. I currently know of no casino that offers this game with good pay schedules, but if there were, I would definitely play it. Now, Mr. Gon, what kind of can you tell me what you were saying is suitable for AM radio?
No, I can't say that.
No, he can't say it. All right. So Bonnie's in the room today as my bodyguard, so he gets real shy about what he's going to say in front of Bonnie. All right. On next week's show, our Richard is going to be Michael Craig. Tell us about that.
Michael Craig writes for he blogs for PokerStars.com, and we're going to be talking about his book. Boy, you got the title.
It's I the do. Professor, it's the professor, the banker, and the suicide king.
Right, that's it. The Professor, the Banker, the Suicide King, which is about a very wealthy gentleman from Texas who decided that he wanted to come and play poker with the best players in the world.
Andy Beal.
And he realized that they were better poker players than he is, but he decided the only thing he had in his favor was he had a ginormous bankroll. And he figured that the way he could use that to his advantage was to make the stakes so high that he would put money pressure on them. So far, that hasn't worked out too well for him. So we'll be talking to Michael Craig about that. You know, Andy Beal, this poker player, is still active. He was just in town recently. I understand he and Todd Brunson each put up $5 million and played a freeze out. So that's our guest for next week. The week after that, we'll be working on getting Bob Nersessian back. So everyone's favorite lawyer.
All right. Now, your father loved to play poker. And so for his last years, even though he was getting a bit senile, he still played poker every day at the El Cortez.
Every day, 8 hours a day.
And did it worry you about, I mean, he's senile. Did it worry you about how much money he was going to lose?
Well, I remember, he played in a dollar 3D. $3,
but is it limit or no limit?
Only three raises.
Okay, so that sounds okay. That sounds like limit hold'em. Okay,
a very limited hold'em. And I remember one day I talked to the poker manager down there, and I said, you know, kind of, you know, I said, kind of keep me up on how my dad was doing. Even my dad first got dementia. He played cards well. He even played pan for a while with dementia, and but then his game started to out of crumble. And I said to the poker manager, I said, you know, if something's happening, give me a call. And about 2 months later, he says, Mr. Gaughan, he calls me at the South Point. He says, Mr. Gaughan, your dad's up to losing two a day. And I said, my dad's losing 2,000 a day. Oh no, he says 200 a day. Well, I said, 200 a day, he can. He can last a long time.
He can last forever, huh?
He can last a very long time.
Yeah, to some people, losing 200 a day would be disastrous, but fortunately your dad didn't have money problems at the end.
No.
All right. Good. Richard, we have about 2 minutes left. How do people find out about our show who want to hear the archive copies?
Right. So, first of all, we really welcome your questions. The show is always better when we hear from the listeners who send us their questions. You can do that by sending email to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. You can reach us at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge or Twitter at RWM21. Now, if you want the show delivered to you while you sleep, you can sign up and the show will be delivered automatically to you every week. You can sign up that way at iTunes or Stitcher, YouTube, or at my website, richardmunchkin.com. And if you'd like to hear archives of all the shows, every show that's ever been done, you can hear that at bobdancer.com. So those are that's how to get a hold of us. We're easy to find.
Very good. So I want to thank our guest, Michael Gaughan. I learned a lot about your father. He was one of the landmark movers and shakers in Las Vegas. He's definitely missed. Thank you for sharing what you know about him.
And thank you, Bob, and thank you, Richard, for having me.
All right. So thank you, Richard. So all our guests, go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.